It's O'Neill Outside. On News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. For fishing and hunting or anything in the great outdoors, O'Neill Williams is your guide. Let's go outside with O'Neill.
Houston, are we up? Hold on, everybody. This is O'Neill with O'Neill Outside Radio. Every Saturday morning, 4 to 6 a.m. on AM 750 and 95.5 FM and the SB Nation Radio Network. We have a very special show today because we have Emily Rushton. She's a wildlife biologist, turkey biologist, and we have with us also Shane Brown, who is a ranger first class, and we're talking turkey hunting and law enforcement over the remaining hour of O'Neill Outside, and we hope that you'll join us at 404-872-0750, or outside the Atlanta calling area is 800-972-8255, with stations from Seattle to Southern California to Maine to the tip of Florida, and we hope you'll give us a call. This is O'Neill and Shane and Emily, and we're here to answer your calls or entertain your observations as we go along. So take note of the numbers again, 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255. And you can be in touch also with us on Facebook at O'Neill Outside. So I think we're tuned in to the SB Nation, Facebook, and everything else all at once, maybe. Or maybe we have some technical problems. I really don't know. We all right with you, Corey? Oh boy, we're all right. So there we go. So let's return to some of our questions that we asked in the first hour of the program. Those of you who have joined us now, and we'll get to that in a moment. Be sure that now we're talking turkey hunting and law enforcement in Georgia, and these answers apply. Trust me, these answers apply also to the eastern wild turkey as he resides all over the southeast. So it's Alabama, the Carolinas, Tennessee, and the mountains, even as far as up in Kentucky. Probably the eastern has a fantastic range. We'll be back, I promise. This is O'Neill. Early morning. Welcome back. This is O'Neill with O'Neill Outside. We're going to repeat some of the questions that we had during the first hour. I know a lot of you guys are just joining, so we have a lot of calls. But first of all, Emily Rushton is a turkey biologist with the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. And I'd like for you to expand on your credentials, if you will, Emily, so that we can give credence to what you're telling us.
Well, I've been a biologist with the Department of Natural Resources for almost 6 years. I just did as the turkey biologist for a few months. This is a new position that DNR has created. And I've been a biologist for a decade. I went to the University of Georgia. There's a great wildlife biology school there, Natural Resource School. Go dogs.
Good. Okay. I have a question for you, but first, because he's calling, been holding on so long, let's talk to Tom. He's calling from Cartersville, Georgia. Good morning, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
In response earlier to a question about hunting over bait, I've got some cow pastures, and the turkeys flock in there in the batches. Around and root through the cow patties and dig the grain, and we have a rolling feeder that we move around the pasture. It's not full all the time, just certain times of day. Would it be considered hunting over bait, hunting in those pastures?
Okay, let's ask Shane. What do you think about that, Shane?
So it goes back to what's normal agricultural practices. So okay. If that's what you do to feed your cows, that's a normal agricultural practice. So that is not illegal.
Good. Now, what I want to know is where do you live? Because I'm going to go over there with you.
up near in north of Taylorsville.
Well, I'm going to knock on the door one day, and you and I are going to turkey hunt.
That may be. Well, I get spent grain from a brewery in Marietta, and feed that to the cattle. And the turkey love that stuff.
I'll
go out there, and there'll be 20 or 30 of them in a pasture at a time.
Mm-hmm. How about that? Excellent question, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you.
You bet. Absolutely excellent question. Now, Emily, what's the status of the turkey population? Up, down, steady, what? Tell me.
Well, across the Southeast, for the past 10 to 15 years or so, we've been seeing some declines in hunter success, declines in birds harvested, and actually some declines in reproduction, too, which is leading us to believe that the turkey population is down. And, you know, we don't really know the reason, the, you know, smoking gun reason why. We have a few theories. It's probably a combination of a lot of things, but we did a lot of turkey restoration throughout from the 70s probably till about the 90s. A lot of you might know, if you've been hunting a long time, that we used to move turkeys all over the state, put them in new habitats where we hadn't had turkeys before. And so what we're seeing now might just be the population's sort of leveling out from mm-hmm. those times of really high reproduction and reintroduction into new habitats. But as you know, the habitats across Georgia have changed a lot in the past 20 years or so. There's been a lot of development. So there might actually, you know, be some less habitat for the turkeys, less nesting habitat, better habitat for predators. And this might also leading to these turkey declines.
Oh, because we've had correct me if I'm wrong, we've definitely had in Georgia and the entire Southeast an elevation in the population of both coyotes and hogs.
Right, yes. As you know, coyotes have really expanded across the state in the past few years. Mm-hmm. You know, hogs too, definitely. And these are, you know, coyotes are a nest predator of turkeys. They're not the main predator. As far as nests go, that award goes to raccoons. Mm-hmm. They are a predator, and hogs too. They compete for resources, our source of competition, can be really destructive to habitats and nests directly if they come across them. So those are two issues.
Well, I know, and we commented on this, or I did in the first hour, I know from experience of being on a turkey hunt that the hogs can really ruin a turkey hunt for you.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the birds are afraid of them.
Yep, they can definitely disturb their breeding activities. They can, disturb the nests and the brooding activities. They're really disruptive to an ecosystem.
I have a question for you, Shane, in just a minute. But right now, let's talk to Alan. Is calling from Gainesville, I believe. Good morning, Alan. You're on the air, sir.
I'm down here in Tallahassee.
Oh, you're in Tallahassee.
Okay. Yeah. My question is, we all know that, and we all hunt pretty much the eastern turkey, mm-hmm. but there's three other breeds, and I know one of them's down here in Florida. It's called the Osceola, I believe.
Yes.
What are the other two, and where in the country are they located?
Why don't you jump in on that, Shane? We've got the ghouls.
The ghouls, the Merriams, Easterns, Osceolas.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I forgetting? Merriams?
Rio Grande.
Rios.
The Rios would be closer. Merriam's out in the Rockies, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, there are five North American, five species that make up the North American slam.
Right.
There's five. I thought there was four.
There's five. The ghouls is in Arizona and that
yes.
direction. None of them are as wary or as difficult to hunt as the Eastern number one and the Osceola being number two.
Well, O'Neill, first off, I'd like to thank you for having this show this morning. I've been hunting turkey for a long time, and this I've already learned several things this morning listening to this fine young man and young lady talk about this, especially the hunting with a muzzleloader. I didn't know you could use a muzzleloader.
Yes,
sir. But it also, I'd like to thank them for what they do. And I'm like you. I support the DNR because it's the only part of the government I don't mind to give my tax dollar to, because I know somebody ain't using it to run for office. They're using it to do what they say that they're going to do with it, you know.
You're right. You are indeed right. Thanks for calling, sir. I always like to hear from you.
All right, buddy.
You bet. See you later. Call me next week.
That's a good segue into a question we had about license fees for lifetime.
Okay. Why don't you ask it?
I forgot what the question was.
All right. The question was, is the lifetime license a really good deal? Is it recommended? Shane?
Yeah, so the state gets federal matches for our license sales. Like the Pittman-Robertson money is based on our license sales as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember the years of credit we get for a lifetime, but that's definitely the way to go. And then say you live in Georgia, you're resident, you buy a lifetime license, and you move to Tennessee. Well, your Georgia lifetime license is good forever.
Right.
So I mean,
should you come back?
And it covers almost everything that you can do as far as hunting or fishing in Georgia.
I'm over 65. I don't have to buy a license, but I do anyway.
So, well, the new license bill stuff that we have, they're making seniors pay the processing fee.
Okay.
And what that does is, because they're not giving it to them free, we can count it as a license sale and get federal money back.
Federal money's back.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, you guys do a wonderful job with that. It's always money well spent. I know during a little speaking engagement I had this week that, and I hope you can contradict me after the break if I was wrong, but Robinson-Pittman Act, whatever it was, in 1927-37, when they determined that it was going to take money for wild places and wild things, and they made that act, it was the hunter and fisherman, the camping, the hiker, who raised his hand and said, okay, put some more taxes on what I buy and I'll pay for it myself, basically. And that doesn't happen anywhere else in society.
That's right.
For sure. 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. So we have anything, honey, from Facebook right now?
Just someone wanted to know about the turkey population at Charlie Elliott, Clybell, WMA.
Okay. We'll get to some of the wildlife management areas and the populations there and other recommendations about staying legal. And we'll handle those on O'Neill Outside when we return. We'll be back in a couple of 3 minutes. Born with a song. Welcome back. You're listening to O'Neill Outside, number one live outdoor-based radio talk show in the world. And today we have with us Emily Rushton, a turkey coordinator and biologist, and Shane Brown, who is a wildlife officer, if you will. And so what was I about to – great question over the Facebook just for a moment ago, and that is for you, Shane. Why don't you have to wear orange in the woods when you're turkey hunting?
Well, if you did, the turkey would never get close enough because he can see that.
That's right.
So another good point with that is, you know, a turkey's head is – red, white, and blue, and any shades in between. So it's recommended that you don't wear red, white, and blue, or even black, because somebody could mistake you for a turkey.
Good idea. Good comment. But he can see colors very plainly.
Very plainly. He wouldn't get within a half a mile of an orange vest.
That's exactly right. Well, with that in mind then, how do you get away with it with deer hunting?
Well, deer are mostly colorblind. They can see a few shades of certain things, and deer look at it more like that's not supposed to be there, where a turkey looks at it and can see the colors and the movement just spot on.
Oh, yeah. If he had a good sense of smell, we would never kill him.
If he had a bear's nose, you would never kill him.
No. He wouldn't get within a mile of
you. That's right.
That's right. But the wearing of camo for deer hunting is hunting. I have friends who wear traditional clothing. Blue jeans and a flannel shirt. They just don't move.
That's the biggest thing, even with turkey hunting. My great-grandfather used to kill turkeys every spring, and he didn't have any camo. He wore overalls every day, long-sleeve flannel shirt, and found him a spot to hide and just sit still.
Yeah, just be still.
Be
don't
still.
Move.
That's it.
My son-in-law, his name is Tim, and he's a turkey hunter, and he actually sat still one day while a hen stepped over his foot while he was sitting at the bottom of a tree.
Wow
is right.
Yeah, wow.
I'll bet you could hear his heart beating.
She probably could.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I've been close by, but not like that.
No, I don't know that I'd want to be that close, because if you spooked her, she might decide to flog you.
Exactly right. I made reference earlier that the more you know, the more you understand, the better turkey hunter you have the capability of being, and the better observance or observant you can be as to the rules and regulations for your side of this program right here. So, what from both of you, what recommendations do you have for reading about turkey hunters, either an author, a book, or magazines?
I would say anything that the NWTF puts out or endorses, because those are guys that enjoy the outdoors, but they put all their focus on just the turkey. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my good friends is the chapter president for Lumpkin Dawson, and of course he deer hunts and he fishes, but turkey hunting's his thing. I mean, that's where he puts his time and effort. So mm-hmm. if they endorse it, I'm sure it would be a good read.
Okay.
Or good information.
Emily?
Yeah, I'll second that. They have, you know, if you go on their website too, they have books they recommend, and yeah, just, you know, reading their magazine and reading all their articles, and you know, talking to other hunters too is just, there's nothing.
Turkey seminars are worthwhile going to, mm-hmm. because they're conducted by turkey hunters,
right.
usually. Mm-hmm. Okay. My recommendation is that for turkey hunting, to capture the romance of the turkey hunt and the romance of the Old South over a long period of time, we should be reading Tom Kelly, The 10th Legion, and all of his books, because he's a master now. Tom's about 90 years old now.
Wow.
But his books, especially The 10th Legion, is a cult book. It's a cult favorite, is The 10th Legion. Yes, ma'am, you have something from Facebook?
We already answered the orange question.
Okay.
Did we not?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. Then, no, we're caught up.
Okay. All right. What special? Let's see. I had something here on my list. Okay. Here's something. How is it or why is it and what's the result when we have controlled burns during the springtime when the turkeys are nesting?
We get this question a lot. People concerned about burning during turkey season, during turkey nesting season. Mm-hmm. And first I'll just say that prescribed burning is probably the best thing you can do. If you have property and want to manage it for turkeys, that's the number one thing to do, because it really improves their nesting habitat, improves their brood rearing habitat. The little weeds that pop up after a burn are great for insect production, for poults in the summer. And, you know, we do on some of our areas, we try not to, but, you know, some of the federal lands too, there's prescribed burnings going on during turkey season. And these spring burns, we've done some research down in South Georgia, and other states have too, that looking at these nests and tracking them, and they found that they aren't really, that a few nests will get burned up, but the turkeys are really good about re-nesting. They'll readily re-nest, basically the benefits from the burn outweigh any chance of burning up the turkey nest. So it's better to get the burns in when you can, even if that's later in the spring.
Good explanation. Let's see, it's 31 after the hour. Let's talk now to Bill, is calling from Powder Springs, Georgia. Good morning, Bill. You're on O'Neill Outside. Welcome.
Good morning, O'Neill. Thanks for taking my call. I got a quick question for you. Now, I've gone turkey hunting a few times in the past. I've never been lucky enough to get one. I'm hoping to change that this year. Mm-hmm. The piece of property that I'm going to hunt, I know the people that lease that property, they have deer feeders that they keep full of feed all year long. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there was a question earlier about hunting over bait, but, you know, that was a naturally occurring agricultural deal. I know this is something different. Would I have to make sure that those feeders are empty or turned off, or you know, how do I make sure I'm doing this the legal way?
Let's get Shane to comment on that again, please.
So we have a 10-day period in Georgia, meaning that any bait or grain or anything has to be removed 10 days prior to hunting. So you could remove it 10 days prior to your hunt, or just stay out of sight and at least 200 yards away from those feeders.
Okay.
It's simple. All right. Well, that's simple enough, wasn't it?
That sure was. Thank you.
You bet. All right. Be safe. Good luck this season.
Thank you.
You bet. When that eastern gobbles, we need all the luck we can get. Let's get to a hunting question, all right, from either one of you, both. What's the biggest mistake turkey hunters make that ruins the hunt?
I would say two things. Number one being that they can't sit still, and I have that problem. I can't sit still. And then, especially in the mountains, they call too much. If he's gobbling and coming to you, it's best just to be quiet.
Just shut up.
Just shut up.
That's right. The worst calling I ever heard came from a hen.
I had a buddy that's a big turkey hunter say that, you know, he called all morning, couldn't get a response, and his 6 or 7 year old son says, "Let me play with that." He says, "Making the god awfulest rackets you ever seen," and here comes the gobbler, wide open.
Oh yeah, you flat running over there.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. That's the big. We fall in love with the sound of our calls. To me, you call more than three times, it's a waste.
Can be.
The only thing I might change that I've seen it done is that you might turn away, turn your back, and call into a different direction, which may influence the gobbler to think she's leaving.
It could. And, you know, the other part is if you call too much, it's unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can pinpoint your location. So the more you call, the more he knows exactly where you're at.
He's got you.
He's looking for you.
Yeah, he's got you zeroed. My favorite turkey hunter, again, I had mentioned it in the first hour, is Roscoe Reams. He's the best turkey hunter I ever knew. And he never, ever called more than three times. But it was a great demonstration the last time I hunted with Roscoe. He heard a gobble, and he leaned over to me. We weren't in a blind. We just stacked up some pine limbs in front of us. And he said, "He's on the limb." Gobbled a second time. 10 minutes. He whispered to me, "He's on the ground." Call one more time. That was it. Turkey came right in. That was a great demo for me. And let's see if I've got time. I do have time for this. Here's a lesson in life. I know I'm supposed to be getting information from you guys, but here's a lesson in life. We were doing a television show, and Travis was hosting the show that day, and he asked Roscoe. I thought this was beautiful. He asked Roscoe, "What's the most important part of the hunt? Scouting, calling, camo, movement, shot placement. What's the most important?" And Roscoe's answer, full of so much wisdom, was, "Whatever it is that you're doing is the most important part of the hunt."
That's good.
Yes, that was good, wasn't it?
That's good.
Yeah, that was good. Roscoe Reams needs to be a part of my next book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was absolutely one of a kind. Okay, 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. Across the country on the SB Nation Radio Network, WSB AM and FM, and we do this every Saturday morning. This is not once in a lifetime, but twice a year. We will have guests from the Department of Natural Resources, and with the upstart of the turkey season, that's our subject matter today. So, call if you like, listen if you like, and you can watch the program beginning on Monday on YouTube or thereabouts. This is O'Neill. More headed your way when we return. Back, everyone. 40 after the hour. We're with Emily Rushton today and Shane Brown. And so let's answer a question that came through on the Facebook page at O'Neill Outside.
Okay. The question was, is strutting in mid-January, is that normal?
Oh, yep. You know, the gobblers will strut, and gobble, you know, year round. They have a pecking order, and they're just establishing dominance, and they want to be the dominant gobbler of the group. So that's, yeah, totally normal.
Mm-hmm. He's just part of the community, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it. Now, in off season prior to the breeding season beginning, after the photo period indicates it should begin, are the gobblers generally in bachelor groups like deer? Does the drove?
No, when breeding season starts, that's more when the groups break up, their winter flocks break up, and the gobblers will go off on their own and try to find as many hens as they can.
Okay, so it's opposite of deer season. Deer season, the bucks are in off breeding season before the rut. The bucks are off by themselves in bachelor groups. Is that right? Am I correct in that?
A lot of times they are.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Because male species, because they're hunted, have evolved into being a little more cautious.
I see.
So two bucks are more likely to see danger versus just one. That's why they like to travel together.
Okay. It's always a mystery to me how a white-tailed deer is a breeding animal. He's a herder. But you see so many of them by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that is we just don't see the other ones that are with
them. And that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, in the mountains here, a lot of times a mature buck will follow the turkeys because he knows the turkeys have the best eyes and ears in the woods.
That's a good observation and probably correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. That would be the safest of all to follow along with.
Sure would.
The eastern. The Rio's guaranteed to die. did we get to this, Emily? What makes up the North American Slam? Did we talk about that?
We've got the eastern, of course, the Osceola down in the central Florida, mm-hmm. and further south, Merriam's, Gould's, and Rio's.
Right. Those five. I have a friend who's gone now, and his name was Dick Kirby. He was a fellow that came up with the Quaker Boy game call. Okay? One of the most famous. Interesting. I think these things are interesting. He was a barber, but he had a natural talent that he could call turkeys without a mouth call. He's one of those guys. Okay? And over his lifetime, after being in the profession of a turkey call maker, over his lifetime, he had 60 grand slams.
Wow.
Wow is right. Well, you hunt every day.
Right.
All over the world. So all over the United States. The most mysterious one to me is the, what do you call that one in Latin America? I'm sorry,
The oscillated?
Oscillated.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't gobble.
No, he's they're interesting. They're sort of more like peafowl or peacocks, you know, especially with how colorful they are too. Mm-hmm. They're the only, because they're a totally different species.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's sort of, I guess, for want of a better term, he might just whistle. You might refer him. He whistles or sings. Mm-hmm. He doesn't gobble, and you shoot him off the limb too, don't you? I think so.
That I'm not sure of, but I'll take your word for it.
You shoot mm-hmm. him off the limb. He's an ugly critter, I'm telling you. He looks like he's painted in watercolors.
Yeah,
you see him sometimes at the shows. So, if you're an avid turkey hunter, you want to know more about turkey hunting, you want to be a better turkey hunter, and we belong to the Wildlife Federation, but nevertheless, the hunter can avail himself of turkey shows, the Wild Turkey Federation trade show and everything, he'll learn a lot, won't he?
And the biggest thing, like Emily was talking about, is some of the guys have been hunting 20 or 30 years, go sit down at the table with them and talk, because those guys were hunting before trail cams and before mm-hmm. all modern technology, so they had to learn the turkey signs. Mm-hmm. They know where the turkey roosts, how he behaves on the roost, when he hits the ground, mm-hmm. and all that stuff versus, hey, I put a camera out over my feeder and saw two gobblers.
Yeah, right. Well, in the case of Roscoe Reams, he started hunting turkeys in the late 40s. And Tom Kelly, another author that I referred to earlier, he started hunting turkeys in the 40s. It's funny that in Tom Kelly, he says, I don't hunt turkeys because I want to. I hunt them because I have to. He's a marvelous author. So that's Tom Kelly's books and Roscoe Reams. Roscoe was on the Steve Allen Show and other television shows. He was a longbow archer, and I have actually seen him with a longbow toss a golf ball in the air and hit it. Now, pardon me, a ping pong ball. Throw a ping pong ball up and hit it with an arrow with a longbow.
That's really impressive.
People can tell I liked Roscoe a lot. Okay, 46 after the hour. We have a few more minutes with our visitors. I hope you'll join us. 404-872-0750, 800-972-8255, and on Facebook. And the purpose of the program today, if you take the time to listen or watch, is after it's over, you should say, I didn't know that. I've got to try that next time. Or I have to keep that in mind to be legal and to make the most out of the hunt. This is O'Neill. We'll be back. Oh, I'm early, aren't I, Karen? Oh, my goodness. See, I've only been doing this 28 years, and once I get some experience, I'll be okay. So we have a few more minutes before I have to go to a break. Sorry, Corey. Sorry, Karen. All right. If you had anything single to pass along for opening day, okay, as far as law enforcement being legal or as the population for turkeys, what would you tell the guy? What would you tell this person?
For me, the law enforcement thing, of course, your license and all that stuff and your permission, but I would just reiterate to be safe about it. Make sure you know what you're shooting, what's beyond what you're shooting. Keep your gun pointed in a safe control, you know, safe area. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of guys in the field, whether bird hunting, deer hunting, whatever, and they get nervous and the gun starts just waving around.
Oh, boy.
You know, keep that muzzle pointed in safe direction and keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to send a round down range.
That's right. Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, be safe. I it tickles me when I see, as you well imagine, when I go to a Bass Pro Shop or anywhere, and I'm always flattered when somebody recognizes O'Neill, and I get to see a lot of photos, you know, and I welcome it, okay? But it tickles me how I see a deer or a turkey, and the gun that they had is pointed right at it.
Oh, my goodness.
So it may be empty and everything, but give me a break.
Well, the number one rule of firearm safety is treat every gun as if it were loaded. Mm-hmm. So would you want to put
there is no such thing as an unloaded gun.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, no such thing. Emily, what would you tell people? Hold on a second. Yes, ma'am.
It'll wait till she finishes.
Pardon me?
Go ahead with her.
Okay.
I just want to, you know, reiterate safety. You know, make sure you're not wearing red, white, and blue like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and have fun and take a kid if you can.
Excellent. I'm glad you brought that up because, and it doesn't have to be a 5-hour hunt.
No.
With a child, you know, just get a couple of answers. You know, after all, when you pull the trigger, the hunt's over. So, you know, just be entertained with, to me, personal opinion, the Eastern wild turkey is the number one big game animal in North America. You have to be talented or experienced in more things and equipped in more ways to successfully hunt the Eastern wild turkey than you do for brown bear or grizzly bear or deer or elk or anything else. Camo, shot placement, call response, okay? All of those things you have to be practiced to hunt the Eastern wild turkey. So he's the number one big game animal. You have something, honey?
Is it possible to spot turkey at night like you would a deer?
Ooh, good question.
Spot them as in hunting? It's absolutely illegal to shoot one at night. If you were just looking for them to see if they were there, I mean, you can see them in the trees roosting. Mm-hmm. I've coon hunted a lot. Flushed them out of the trees and scare you to death in the middle of the night.
That's right. How fast can a turkey fly, Emily?
Oh, gosh. I don't know the mileage. But, I mean, they could go pretty fast, but not for a long distance. So it's short distance.
He can fly really fast, and he can glide for a long, long time. with those big wings. I've seen them, been deer hunting, been fishing at West Point Lake and down at Oconee, and see one leave the bank, run, fly, and glide for, heavens, a quarter of a mile at 3 feet off of the surface. And it's not a bad way to hunt turkeys out of a boat. Is that legal?
You can't hunt under any vessel or vehicle under power.
You sneaky rascal, you.
The key word is under power.
Under power, that's right. You can sit there and it'd be all right.
Yeah, you can use it as a blind. You just can't be motoring around looking for them.
There you go. A blind on a V-bottom aluminum boat. Okay. All right. What other things can we chat about this morning that might be... let's talk about this. I think we did it in the first hour. We've had an increase in license fees. Is that good?
Yes. We're finally catching up with the rest of the Southeast. We haven't had a fee increase since 1992. And so in 2017, our legislature passed a fee increase, and we are using that revenue already. We're hiring more game wardens. We are increasing our access on our WMAs. We're buying new properties and increasing road maintenance. We spent more money on road maintenance, on technicians to manage these areas. We're improving our shooting range opportunities. So these are all things that were, you know, requested of us from citizens. So these are, you know, we're trying to make the revenue increase, the fee increase worth the while of the hunters and anglers in Georgia.
You're doing a marvelous job. Quickly, then, from the two of you, and I'll give my estimate when we return, what's the best time of the year, within season, what's the best time of the year to hunt turkeys?
I'm a mid-season person, I guess, mm-hmm. because let them get that initial breeding a couple of the hens to get that over with, mm-hmm. and then they're out looking for a girlfriend again, and instead of just gobbling in the morning time, you might hear them gobble at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. Then you got it.
Mm-hmm. You got him then. Emily?
Yep, I agree. We've got, you know, one of the longest turkey seasons in the country, and take advantage after, you know, after the woods clear out a little bit after the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell people, hunt during the week, late in the season. Last 2 weeks is the best. The gobblers are lonesome. Mm-hmm. They're listening for a hen call. They sure are. Okay, we got some calls here. I promise we'll get to them upon our return. The show's about to end, so we'll have to do that. So this is O'Neill Outside. We're going to jump out of here a few seconds early, if it's all right with everyone. 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. And I promise, after this short break, we'll be back and conclude the program. Welcome back, everyone. 57 after the hour. Let's get one more caller in if we can. Here's John, and John is calling from, I can't read it. John, welcome to the program.
Good morning. My son, Cade Holbrook, and I are headed down to enjoy this early hunt.
Good.
And 2 years ago, my daughter was able to get one. So I think it's a great idea, and even after my kids get grown, I'll be borrowing kids to go this early.
Good for you.
It's just, I love to call. I hadn't pulled the trigger in probably 8 years, but I've been responsible for many a heartbeat since then. But I think it's just a great idea, and I just want to say I appreciate the DNR coming up with stuff to get kids involved.
Good. It was a good idea.
Yes, great idea.
Because I got to tell you that turkey hunting for a youngster will last a lot longer than playing football in high school.
Well, and my kids enjoy it a little more than deer hunting because it's Georgia boy elk hunting. You get to hear them calling and answering, and you know they're coming.
You bet. It's a good observation. You're right. It's an exciting hunt. And thanks for calling. Good luck to you today.
Thank you.
You bet. See you soon. There you go. There's a fellow with a youngster that's going to enjoy the morning.
That's awesome. That's the name of the game, getting the kids out of the house.
You bet. It lasts a whole lot longer. Shane, Emily, thank you very much for getting up so early and coming in here and sharing the information, your expertise, and your daily activities. It meant a lot to me, to Woman Williams, and to my audience. So I thank you very, very much. And the Georgia Department of Natural Resources that supports my television show and our radio program. Very, very much. I always learn a lot, and I do, and so does the audience during your visit. So I thank you very, very much.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
It's been fun.
Okay? Yes, it has.
Yes, it has.
My two favorite days of the year is when you all come visit with us.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. All right, everyone, that's about it. We're headed out, and if I can pass along anything, the following may or may not be a surprise. If you're too busy to go fishing and take a kid along, you're too busy. And I'll see you guys next week.
Sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.